Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, and thank you for joining today's teleconference. What matters now? Identifying the problem solvers in a low-growth, low-interest rate world. Please note that all lines will be muted throughout the duration of the call. Today's discussion may contain forward-looking statements. All statements made that are not historical facts are subject to a number of risks and uncertainties, and actual results may differ materially. Please refer to ARS's most recent outlook and the ARS website for important legal and disclosure information. And with that, I will turn the call over to Stephen Burke. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Jason, and welcome everyone, and hope everyone had a happy Thanksgiving and a good long weekend for those outside of Canada, outside of the U.S. There's no historical precedent for the times we're living in since the financial crisis, and the convergence that we've had of unprecedented economic conditions with unconventional monetary policy, insufficient fiscal policy, and changing structure of the market are creating some challenges for investors. Today we'd like to shed some light on the way we see the world and where the opportunities are, particularly as it relates to the problem solvers of a low-growth, low-interest rate world. We've seen a lot of volatility and uncertainty. There's a crazy political backdrop with around the world. The Middle East is going through some tremendous periods of protests. Hong Kong protests are clear. Governments are changing around the world. And it's creating some shifts both in populist politics, but growing economic divergences. And at the same time, we have changing terms of global trade. So we use our outlooks to define the environment for us, and they are the foundation of our investment philosophy and process. We spend our time working to determine the outcomes that should have the highest probability of success. Those outcomes lead us to identify important secular themes which drive our investment process and client portfolios. Excuse me. John Maynard Keynes is credited with saying it's better to be roughly right than precisely wrong, and that's what we're attempting to do when we frame the environment through our investment outlooks. Today we want to talk about what some of the big challenges are and how you identify the problem solvers and then take advantage of them. We also want to share some questions that we're hearing from clients, and then we want to introduce a new emerging secular theme around climate change, which is on people's minds. So with that, let's get started. I'm joined by Arnold Schmeidler, and Arnold, the first question for you is, in a low-growth, low-interest rate world, how should clients invest to benefit?
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for dialing in. This low interest rate environment that we're in, by definition, makes it very difficult for people to achieve the income needs that they have. And so one of the most important questions for us is, are we in a temporarily low interest rate scenario, or is this likely to last longer? We are of the view that the linkages that we see between deflation, low growth, low interest rates, low capital costs, high debt, large U.S. budget deficits, particularly on the federal level, suggest that the level of interest rates that we have today are not an aberration for a short period of time. This is likely to be with us for an extended period. Under these circumstances, some of the best income generation will come from companies that benefit from the secular trends and that pay good and rising dividends. Notwithstanding market volatility, the nature of these linkages suggests that the U.S. economy, being the strongest economy in the developed world, will continue to attract capital flows, which then will result in a stronger dollar, a continued low interest rate environment, higher costs for foreign economies that are purchasing products that are traded in dollars, and therefore putting deflationary pressures on those economies, which yield a strong flow of capital to income-producing properties, among others, in the United States. And yield is going to continue to be, in our view, one of the most attractive aspects of the investment scene. Notwithstanding that, lower input prices because of a strong dollar, that is input and import prices, should suggest that consumer spending in the United States will benefit as long as this period prevails. And it's very hard to say that the probabilities are not high that the U.S. will continue to be a strong economy and that capital will continue to flow to the U.S. Under these circumstances, companies that benefit from these forces should fetch premium valuations, notwithstanding market volatility, which can work to our advantage if we have cash to take advantage of the amplitudes of the market when the markets decide to misbehave a little bit. But that's within the context of investing significant amounts of capital in common stocks. Bonds are, in our view, under these conditions, of questionable use because the yields on bonds cannot compete, on quality bonds, that is, cannot compete with many yields on common stocks. The companies that benefit the most from these elements are companies that are involved in secular growth, whether it's infrastructure, cybersecurity, healthcare, defense,
cloud.
Cloud is growing 20-30% a year, storage, 5G, which is a major element in continuing to push down costs for consumers as well as for industry, and 5G and green technology, which is a very important issue for us. United Nations meeting today in Spain to discuss climate change. And what's interesting about climate change is that we all think it's pretty easy to incorporate into the system if we have the political will to do it. But the fact is it is not easy because we depend very much on power. Power, electric power, is to 5G and to green technology as food is to all of us as individuals. Without the proper power, we cannot achieve green, we cannot achieve 5G, which is fundamental to advancing technology that ultimately lowers the costs and increases efficiency and productivity for all who are able to consume the results of 5G and green technology. Let me give you an example of the stumbling blocks we have in incorporating green, which is investable if we know where to invest to solve that issue. The stumbling block is really the utility sector of the United States, because the utility sector, the transmission, the production, the distribution of utility power is basically and has been built basically as a one-directional, unidirectional situation. Our utility structure started 100 years ago, more than 100 years ago. It is outmoded. We cannot move power from excess surplus areas of the country, which, let's say, are solar beneficiaries as well as wind beneficiaries. We cannot move that power to, let's say, the Northeast from the Southwest. Big investment is required. When we talk about large investment, we're talking about in the hundreds of billions of dollars. Four utilities alone in the United States over the next 4 years will be spending over $100 billion. Now, the reason we bring this up is twofold. Number one, there are secular beneficiaries who service those utilities. Number two, the government inability, the U.S. government inability, because of the political impediments to bipartisanship, has been unable to deal with the themes that we've written about for years, namely the underinvestment in infrastructure. But we don't depend on the federal government, because right now the private sector is investing huge amounts of money to make the utility system capable of handling excess surplus power that's based upon solar, wind, and other forms of other sources of power that cannot be transmitted across the country easily. So we are interested in finding the companies that benefit from this spending. Now, from a point of view of inflation rates, interest rates, and corporate profits. The United States being the strongest economy in the developed world, the strongest in the developed world means that interest rates, inflation rates, corporate profits will continue to be on an upswing. Short of some major exogenous events, which would be short-term in nature, the outlook for corporate profits remains quite positive. And as long as that's the case, and bear in mind that there are many people who think that our present interest rate structure is an aberration because it hasn't happened before, and therefore is of a short-term nature. We believe that the low interest rate structure is not of a short-term nature. And if we are correct, and so far for the past many years, we have been proven to be correct in that assessment, if we continue to be correct, then what institutions and individuals, what investors are willing to pay for corporate profits will be a higher rate than what had prevailed in the past. So for us, the stock market, which has been the subject of many opinions suggesting that it's too high, that it's overvalued, that it's temporary, in our view, the value of earnings, a stream of earnings, is going to continue to be very, very attractive, to find the most important secular beneficiaries. We will find companies whose prices are not the average PE multiple, price earnings multiple you would expect. So what we are looking for are companies that have one very important characteristic in the secular area, and that is companies whose revenue can continue to grow significantly year over year. And there are any number of companies, by definition, whether it's cybersecurity, whether it's infrastructure, whether it's healthcare, any number of companies and industries that meet the definition of the secular beneficiaries, they are going to, in our view, will continue to attract capital and therefore will continue to sell at prices that are higher than what normally one would expect to see, because bear in mind that when interest rates were much higher over most of the past 50 years, the valuation given to earnings, the PE multiple, the price earnings ratio that people were willing to pay was a lot lower than what you see today being afforded to many companies that are beneficiaries of these trends. So from our perspective, this remains a very positive time to be investing in equities, because there really are few choices, and particularly since many equities are not priced as highly as they will be a year from now or 2 years from now, in our view, for the simple reason that corporate earnings for these companies will continue to rise. And many of these companies not only spend the capital that they generate, but many of them generate more capital than they need, and so that excess capital is given back to the shareholders in the form of dividends and in the form of share repurchase programs. The repurchase programs have a very important aspect to them, namely, the number of shares then outstanding for a company is reduced, which by definition means that a fixed number of dollars of earnings will then be divided by fewer outstanding shares, and therefore those shares will tend to appreciate more than they otherwise would if those share repurchase programs would not be undertaken. The amount of capital, excess capital, that exists in the system is quite significant, and those companies that are in a position to repurchase shares are also in a position to make acquisitions. And we expect the acquisition outlook will continue to be very favorable as companies continue to try to reduce costs, at the same time increase revenue. So under these conditions, the outlook for companies that are uniquely positioned becomes even stronger as the potential competitive factors can get reduced. Now, this would normally be an inflationary outcome if you're reducing competition. The problem with that line of reasoning is that there is so much cost pressure on the system. The experience of companies to raise prices has been very negative. They lose customers. They lose consumers. So companies must maintain a low-cost profile in order to make sure that its growth continues. If they don't maintain a low-cost profile, competition will come in, and the competition will offer a lower cost. So this deflation-prone system, which also occurs while we have a great deal of debt in the system, means that the United States economy, as well as the other developed economies, cannot afford a higher interest rate structure. A higher interest rate structure will, by definition, slow economic activity. Slowing economic activity will put more downward pressure on the price level, on what people have to pay. Under these conditions, we expect the central banks will continue to maintain a highly accommodative monetary policy to prevent a slowdown in economic activity. One element that is operating against economic growth today is the trade situation. Anytime you put restrictions on trade, you slow the economy. Slowing the economy puts more downward pressure, the same kind of downward pressure as if a recession were to occur. Well, we don't see a recession. What we do see, as long as trade remains the kind of negative influence it has, it will continue to pressure debt and continue to put pressure on the deflationary forces, which continues to make a very positive conclusion to the definition and the identification of good growth companies that are benefiting from what money has to be spent in order to make a system and a company more efficient and to grow earnings. So all of these linkages are unique, but one has to understand that comparisons with the past are not relevant. Certain comparisons are relevant, but we, in our business, we've been doing this now for 60 years, some of us. In our business, we have to be careful to know when to compare to a past situation, when not to compare. And there are so many unique characteristics today, and most people have never lived through a deflation-prone system. We've always been living through inflation-prone systems. So under those conditions, we have to think, well, so-called out of the box. But the secret to coming to high probability conclusions rests in being able to understand the linkages between capital flows, deflation, low cost of capital, high debt structures. And when we talk about high debt structures, just ask yourself, here in the United States, we are running a $1 trillion federal budget deficit at what is closer probably to the top of a business cycle than the bottom of a business cycle. We've been growing now for over 10 years. Now, how many times could we point to a business cycle that's almost mature, but not there yet, which has been running fiscal deficits on the order of $1 trillion or 5% of U.S. GDP without generating inflation? That's never happened, and yet it's there, and we're not concerned. The central bankers are not concerned about inflation. They're trying to get inflation up to 2%, and now even saying, well, maybe it should even be a little bit higher. So the uniqueness of this environment spells success for any high probability outcome that can be defined by any of us or any of you who can define where the opportunities are, how to handle those opportunities in a market environment that is volatile. And for us, we like to be well invested, but we also like to have cash available to be able to take advantage of any downward trends, short-term market pullbacks, that give us the opportunity to invest wisely. Now, these market pullbacks are a product of two things, obviously people's behavior, but it's also a product of computer algorithmic trading, which is really not based upon anybody's decision. It is only based upon how the algorithms have been created to create either buying or selling opportunities. So if that's the case, which it is, then that means that we would be able, anybody with cash reserves can be able to step in and take advantage of the lower prices for high quality investments, in many cases generating income that's well above what you could develop in what you could achieve in a high quality or a U.S. Treasury absolute AAA kind of investment. So these are the elements that we think about, focus on a great deal. Now, lastly, I just want to point out one thing about 5G. 5G is going to be coming into the system over the next 5-6 years. The amount of money being spent globally has been estimated at $1 trillion. We have identified many beneficiaries of the 5G conversion, which means that for all of us, latency will essentially be eliminated. Latency, an example of latency is when you're in a car, you're at a red light, the light changes to green, and you're very conscious of the fact that it takes you a little bit of time to move from the brake pedal to the accelerator. That time difference is latency. With 5G, the latency can be reduced to 4 milliseconds, 1 millisecond. There would be no perceptible change from the time you input something to the time you get an output. When this is used, whether it's robotic surgery, whether it's calculations, that will take normally thousands of years, you can do in minutes, whether it's downloading information, films in a matter of seconds, that takes now 10 minutes, high quality communication, the highest quality communication. Now the U.S. has no choice but to put a great deal of money into 5G, if for no other reason than the competition from overseas, whether it's China or any other country, that must also and is investing in 5G. So we are being, if we want to maintain leadership, we're going to have to continue to put large amounts of money into 5G, and the industries that benefit are industries that we either own or that we're studying, and the companies that represent great values for us in this area.
Well, you answered one of the client questions, which are how do trade negotiations affect our economic outlook. Another question we have from clients, Arnold, is, with all the protests around the world, how does the current political climate impact our investment approach?
Well, protests, just speaking from a financial point of view, protests slow economic activity. A slowdown in economic activity from whatever source is something to be avoided. And certainly, if it's too much of a slowdown, then you wind up with recessionary tendencies. So the best cure, in our view, for these slowdowns or for these protests is going to be based upon a greater equality around the developed world and even the not developed world between the haves and have-nots, because with social media able to portray living standards all over that are superior to other living standards, everybody wants the same benefit. So governments are going to have to address the causes of these protests. In a very real sense, addressing these protests on the government side is a very positive thing, because if we can reduce inequality, if we can raise living standards, all that means is more economic growth, balanced growth, and more political stability. So The interesting thing will be to watch how these protests actually result. We've seen government leaders thrown out, resigning. This can all be interpreted with a positive outcome. Then the protests are negative in a sense. If people get injured, people get killed. But when it results in a change of government, automatically it will result in a change in policy.
Climate change is a hot topic. You touched on that as an emerging theme about just dealing with the transmission system in the U.S. It's a problem around the world of how we get there. What are some of the industries that you see being impacted, and what's the impact of the move to climate change and the volatile storms we're having on industries and also on our economic outlook?
We can't postpone hardening the assets that we have climate change. You know that there are cities, towns that are being moved to avoid the damage of climate change and too close to seas, rising sea levels. But when we look at the, let's say, the public utility sector, which now just four out of many in the United States, spending over $100 billion over the next 3.5-4 years in order to deal with green power, the answer to climate change is to avoid the rising temperatures of the oceans. Now, in order to do that, we have to reduce fossil fuel consumption. We're not going to eliminate fossil fuel consumption by any stretch of the imagination. But if utilities, which they are doing now, putting themselves in a position of acquiring wind power assets, solar assets, the problem that they face is that they can then generate more power than their customers can use, because they're not able to move it to where there's the greatest need, namely, for example, Texas, Arizona, lots of sun, so lots of solar power. But what do you do with it? Because the people there are limited populations facing the prospect of a great deal of energy availability, which then becomes surplus. That surplus has to be transported, has to be transmitted, has to be using transmission lines, transformers, distribution systems, etc. The ideal would be to move it all, let's say, all the surplus to the Northeast, where we don't have the benefit of solar and not necessarily as much wind power as we need. So in order to do that, we have to look at the companies that service and serve the utilities expenditures. If they're spending $100 billion, if four of them are spending $100 billion, who are they spending it with? That's the research challenge that we've been working on and we will continue to work on. And as a result, we will find companies that are major beneficiaries of these expenditures. Now, something very interesting has occurred. It used to be that utilities had a lot of unregulated businesses because then they were free to have rates of return that were excess to the allowable rates. Leading utilities, many utilities, have gotten rid of their unregulated because they are now getting from the public service commissions allowable 10% returns and more. So if they're going to spend, if four of them are going to spend $100 billion over 3 or 4 years, that means they're going to be able to earn $10 billion on that investment. So utilities not only will be raising money and spending money, but they themselves will be raising dividends as they do every single year. And then the question becomes, are they better investments than bonds that pay 1.5% or 2.5%?
Well, we've covered a lot in a short period of time. We want to keep it to 30 minutes, so we thank you, Arnold, for a great round the world in a short time. We have some welcome any questions that weren't answered on the call, so please give us a call for that. Throughout the year, we've been cautiously optimistic about the equity markets and remain that way. As we head into the new year, we see some continued opportunities, particularly in the secular themes. We have an election next year that will be on people's minds for some time, but we're a long way away from getting to the to where that becomes as big an issue for the markets. So we welcome any questions that you have.
Name themes. What's name?
The big themes that we're focused on and remain focused on are technology, particularly around cloud, cyber, the semiconductor area, both equipment and the chip area. We continue to focus on storage as well. Autonomous vehicles is another theme that continues to evolve. As you're seeing in the Middle East, the situations are getting more volatile, so the defense industry continues to be a major beneficiary. Healthcare is one that's actually a fascinating area because of the concerns about pricing are weighing on some of the pharma stocks, but the new technologies and innovating drugs is one of the ways to lower costs, so it's an area of a lot of excitement for us as well. And we still think there's huge opportunities in the small cap area. We'd welcome our conversations about that with the clients. M&A is going to continue in special situations. So we thank you for the time today. We look forward to speaking in more detail with you on an individual basis. And any questions, feel free to give us a call. Thank you. Jason?
Thank you very much.
That concludes our conference. Thank you for choosing AT&T Event Conferencing Enhanced. You may now disconnect.